Good morning. I'm guessing most of you know me. I'm Lon Deal. My wife Holly and I own the record probably for consecutive years attending this church, going on 32 now, as we are one of the founding families. This is my second time speaking to you up here on a Body Life Sunday. The first time, I gave you a little mini bio. Most of you probably don't remember that. But today I want to speak a little bit about something relatively new in my life. That's retirement. Something I've been enjoying for nearly 3 years now. I worked for over 40 years in IT across multiple corporations, Essex Group, Magnavox, Computer Sciences, Swiss Re, and Lincoln. Dealt with constant change in technology, first coding in COBOL and JCL on mainframes, then later C and Java on PCs, and finally Amazon Web Services in the cloud. Of course, the last couple of years were spent working at home due to COVID. And for the most part, work was actually fun for many years, except those times when I'd get phone calls in the middle of the night and had to drive in because something had gone wrong. But the last few years really honestly became a chore as outsourcing and corporate wokeness kind of became the latest craze. Since Holly and I have neither the interest nor the funds to buy a yacht and sail around the world or buy a vineyard, two typical things you see in commercials for investment management firms. And since I don't want to sit around at home every day knowing that I'd drive Holly crazy, I search for volunteer opportunities. One of the things I decided to do was occasionally deliver blood for the Red Cross as a volunteer. And although I haven't done that in a while due to various health issues that Holly and I have had, this has proved to be enjoyable, as I can drive for hours, stopping at several hospitals, all the while listening to music or maybe a sermon or two. I often wonder when I have to do a stat run where the blood needs to be delivered immediately, if the person receiving it, will survive whatever trauma happened to them. And even though the Red Cross is definitely not a Christian organization, the timely delivery of blood certainly is important. And as most of you know, I've been on a couple of disaster rebuild weeks with Samaritan's Purse and hope to do more of this in the future. As you also know, our last trip was cut unexpectedly short due to Holly's unfortunate accident in Kentucky. I've also been able to work with Mike Spencer as his webmaster for ProjectLifeVoice.com and as a producer of his podcasts. I also work with him in contacting Christian schools in Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, and actually across the country in an attempt to get Michael into their schools for speaking opportunities. Unfortunately, most Christian schools are very averse to having the topic of abortion even mentioned, so getting into them is very difficult. I've accompanied him to many of his speaking engagements, yesterday, to assist with his audio-video setup and teardown. I've had the pleasure of speaking with many folks, where he's spoken after his presentation. And many of you know Kathy Humbarger. One day after talking with Michael, she called me and said if I could take on the same tasks for her. While neither of these require a lot of my time, both opportunities have allowed me to keep one foot in the tech world, what I know and understand, and has allowed me to use my tech skills for good, solid, Christian-based organizations. But enough about me. Who I really want to tell you about this morning is Ted. Ted's a guy I met on my first trip to Mayfield, Kentucky with Samaritan's Purse. One morning, Ted led the morning devotions, and I found his story quite amazing. Ted originally lived on the West Coast, moved back to the Midwest because one of his kids lived around there, and also had a child in Denver. So according to Ted, shortly after he retired, and this was, I think he said he was around 70, he boarded a flight coming home from his daughter's house, I believe it was in Denver. And he admitted that at that time in his life, he was really struggling with retirement and really having difficulty finding purpose in his life. He also said that although he was a believer, he was really struggling spiritually. Now, Ted had recently had rotator cuff surgery, and he was healed up enough where he could help his daughter with some renovations at her house in Denver, but he learned he was seated in the exit row, and he knew that he was, would not be able to, if necessary, open the emergency door, throw it in the, you know, plane and get everybody out. So he notified the flight attendant that he wouldn't be able to do that, that duty in the event of an emergency. So as a result, he was moved to the window seat one row behind the exit row. And from that seat, he had a good view of the wing. And while he was seated there, looking out the window while the boarding had nearly completed, he noticed an object protruding up from the wing. Kind of concerned, he called for the flight attendant and said, take a look at this. And she assured him that someone would take a look at it. Well, as you can imagine, by the time boarding had completed, everybody wanted to get going. They want that plane to push back from the gate. Well, a few minutes later, time dragged on, the pilot came back, talked to Ted. Pilot peered out the window and asked Ted to point out, what he'd seen. Well, pilot went back up front, and shortly afterwards, an announcement came across the plane's speakers telling the passengers there's going to be a slight delay. Now, as you would expect, grumbling ensued, and much of it was directed towards Ted. Your fault, we're going to be late. Pretty soon, scissors lifts came up by the wing, and maintenance personnel were crawling around and talking to each other. Grumbling continued. Another announcement about another short delay came to the passengers. Well, pretty soon, two or three guys were out on the wing, opening up panels on the wing, looking at it, pointing, talking among themselves. Well, then they conferred with the flight crew. Pretty soon, the pilot walked back to Ted's row, bent down on one knee, and told Ted that the object that Ted noticed had pierced an electrical wire and nicked some other critical component, and that had it not been found, the plane probably would have crashed 50 yards beyond the end of the runway. Well, word quickly spread throughout the cabin that Ted had essentially saved them all from catastrophe. As you may expect, the crew and passengers were asked to disembark the plane and wait for a replacement aircraft to take them to their destination. Well, Ted was obviously shook up. So he went into the airport restroom to kind of calm down. And when he exited, he was met by many of his fellow passengers who basically gave him a standing ovation, clapping for him, patting him on the back, and thanking him profusely for quite literally saving their lives. Ted was so moved by these series of events that he felt it had to have been God's hand putting him there, at the right place at the right time. He became serious about his faith and rededicated his life to Christ soon after, and was now active with his church and very active with Samaritan's Purse as well. Quite a story. So back to me. I can say that my retirement has not had any event even remotely close to Ted's, and I don't anticipate anything like that happening to me. I'd probably be one of the passengers sitting there being really annoyed by the delay. But I think the moral of the story is that while none of us could ever expect something like that happening to us, we should never sell God short. I think the important thing to do in retirement is to never retire on our faith and continually search for something that advances God's kingdom. So whether it's saving hundreds of people from a plane crash, working a part-time job, volunteering for a good cause, watching your grandkids, even playing pool with a bunch of pagans, or as Greg Kokel says, simply putting a pebble on your neighbor's shoe, God can certainly use those of us who are retired in ways we may never have imagined. And back to Ted for a second. I forgot to mention what Ted's job was before he retired. He lived in Seattle and worked for Boeing as a wing inspector.
Good morning. My nerves were actually okay before Ted's near plane crash story. I have to get over a little flight anxiety too. Last week, during a particularly convicting part of Wendell's sermon, I turned to Rachel to indicate that his words applied to me. Nate leaned over and whispered, "This isn't about you." To which I replied, "It's always about me." And now, Wendell has granted me an opportunity to stand up here and talk about myself. You'd think that'd be the perfect gift for someone as self-focused as I am. However, I've had nearly 6 months to dread this blessed assignment. I even tried to get out of it by telling Wendell that I recently taken spiritual gifts assessment did not rank me high on teaching or exhortation. My God-given talents lie more behind the scenes. However, Wendell does not appreciate or respect the work of the Holy Spirit in my life. And evidently painting walls does not get you out of public speaking. I've had a difficult time deciding what direction to go with this reflection. There are so many ways to throw myself under the bus and such little time. Look at Heather and Brandy for affirmation and laughter. During my previous Body Life Sunday experience, I talked about my struggles against selfishness, most vividly revealed in loving Ezekiel. But that topic is boring even to me, so I won't put the congregation through that one again. It is still relevant, but overplayed. What I'd really like to do this morning is to echo, or even one-up, Nate Elkington's Body Life Sunday. But I don't want to get into a contest about who loves and is more committed to this church body. The funny thing about this body life reflection is that I'm actually prideful enough to think that people are going to go home and ruminate on my words. No, none of you are going to go home and dissect the things coming out of my mouth. I'm really going to have to get over that one because I cannot write 150 PCR texts. Most of you are probably familiar with my PCR. It's a chronic condition, and I cannot seem to find a cure. PCR stands for post-conversation remorse. Maybe being mute would be a potential treatment, but I would just find different ways to regret my words, texting, emailing, letter writing. PCR brings me to the concept of sanctification. I thought about focusing this time on sanctification, but I'm kind of frustrated with that process. Sometimes it feels like I'm moving backwards and becoming less Christ-like. I seem to regret more and more. My filter, instead of becoming fine-tuned and only letting through what is helpful for building others up, seems to have bigger and bigger holes. I am appalled by some of the things that still make it past my lips. Being committed to living as part of this local body of Christ means that my sin feels like it's showcased in my regular interactions. It's not just my husband or my kids who get to hear, see, and feel my shortcomings. Now it's the pastors, my friends, women's ministry, co-op, and youth group. The more time spent with these people means more opportunities to say the things that I will regret. Thankfully, you've all done an excellent job overlooking and forgiving these transgressions, and sometimes reframing them, Maddie. Sometimes, though, I'm ashamed to admit, I will disparage someone out of my own insecurity. I will criticize an idea because it wasn't mine. I will gossip out of a desire to elevate myself. It's gross, and it feels so heavy when I realize what I've done. But even with the PCR texts, apologies, my lack of sanctification, and the humiliation, I love being a part of this body. The more I've invested, the more I've gotten out of it. See how selfish I am? Even my service is actually self-serving. I have so much love for this church, and sometimes God even blesses me with warm, fuzzy feelings. And that's really saying something, because those are pretty rare. And some of you are not that lovable. Making slow eye contact with Guy and Wendell. Actually, my frustration is with myself rather than any of you. Wendell was the first to introduce me to the concept of one day being at peace with myself. I cannot wait for that. It's something I can't even imagine. That thought is such salve. But when? And can I experience any of that peace here and now? Because I think Wendell missed a major bullet point in last week's sermon. He gave the following reasons for people not praying that God would develop the virtue of humility in them. 1, it's not a problem for me. 2, I can humble myself without God. 3, I don't desire to be more humble. 4, the idea of praying for humility isn't something that has ever occurred to me. I kept waiting for him to get to the biggest obstacle. 5, humiliation. If I pray for humility, I might say more stupid things. I might get a another Body Life Sunday assignment and have to give it with a giant cold sore. I might embarrass myself even worse. It might mean more PCR texts and apologies, and sometimes those are really humiliating. But I do believe it is worth the humiliation to be more like Jesus. Hold me to that as you start to see God working on these things in my life. It might get really ugly. If you want to join me in this humiliating quest to be humble, dive in. The past few years of increased involvement and service here at Tech have demonstrated to me that serving is the key to intimacy and to fellowship. And it's fun. I enjoy hanging out with Bria and Rebecca on Wednesday nights, and the youth too. Rebecca has been faithfully attending and then serving our youth group on Wednesday nights for 22 years. And she isn't even the one that wants to cancel when Josh is occasionally unavailable. That's Tim and I. Austin and I frequently argue about how much he can realistically do for this church because he wants to do everything. Carrie Long took over Sunday school materials after Connie Smith's almost two decades of work. The Powers organize the nursery. The elders invest countless hours caring for, leading, and teaching the body. Dave Pilditch took over furniture assembly from me after I proved to be unskilled and uninterested. And he's also played the piano forever. I asked Gary Otis to hang a TV and a whiteboard and came back the next week and it was done and looked amazing. Deanna and Kim take care of the books and giving. People volunteer to do sermons. Wait, actually, Wendell, is that true or do you make them? Maybe people don't volunteer to do sermons. Never mind. Maddie hosts and makes real food for the young adults. People volunteer and Sunday school, women's ministry, the picnic, communion. Kennedy even has to wash those cups we don't use because we can't afford to throw those away. Andrea organizes Advent. Numerous people count the offering, work in the nursery, or play in the band, and Josh has already identified three more people I didn't even know about this morning, and I know I'm missing several. This is an every member ministry. I like to use that Wendell quote on my kids too. Along with, the need is the call. What need can you meet? What can you do to help? Life is so much richer being a part of this church, even with the occasional humiliations that come with the intimacy. I love this church body. I am selfish and I'm not great at loving, but the more I invest, the more I love. You should all invest and get some warm fuzzies. And now I need to go send some PCR texts.
Interaction number one. David, are you praying for me? One of the Church of the Lamb members asked me this long ago on a Sunday morning. I shall not give her name. She has since, to borrow a phrase, fallen asleep and is no longer with us. So while my naming her as an example of godliness could no longer pose a stumbling block for her, it is her example, not her identity, that I want to share. I was unprepared. Well, I looked around, fidgeted, hesitated. I did not know her very well, but it was evident that she was a kind person. She was not trying to trip me up, so she waited exactly long enough before letting me off the hook. I am praying for you. Can I ask you to pray for me also? Of course, I said that I would. It was that simple. But that simple exchange left a deep impression. I must admit, I have fallen very short in honoring her request, but it remains a treasured memory. Interaction number two. David, said Mrs. H, I wanted to tell you that I am praying for you regularly. Mrs. H was a slight, elderly lady at my parents' church who served faithfully in children's programs, PBS, Sunday school, nursery. Her kids had grown. She loved the kids of the church. dearly. She had known me since infancy. Here, she addressed me as a preteen. And it was very matter-of-fact. She wasn't bragging. She wasn't currying favor. It seemed that she only thought I ought to know the simple fact that someone was praying for me. I remember it vividly. It was just outside the Sunday school room, in one of the hallways by a coat rack. It may be worth noting that her husband, Mr. H, was one of those figures in a young boy's life that intimidated or even frightened one. But Mrs. H, in keeping with the philosophy that spouses should complement one another, was always warm and accepting. Mrs. H was another early illustration of godliness in my life. Interaction number three. Please pray for my family. This was the request to the entire congregation one Sunday, and this was also at Church of the Lamb. We aren't perfect. We don't have it all together. Perhaps this request was the best of the three. It showed the humility that we've been exhorted many times from this pulpit to exhibit. It also showed dependence on God, specifically insofar as God uses our body, our local body, to help us in our needs, to come alongside us. And please, let's not deceive ourselves. We all are in very great need. And being willing to admit this reflects, one, humility, and two, an example of openness to others. That kind of community, more specifically this community right here, this family, this local body, is essential. We need each other. Or, to put it another way, we have the very high honor of exercising our God-given talents to support each other. None of us, not even the best of us, is so good that we can plod along alone without the others. May God forgive me for ever thinking this way. I want to read a short, familiar passage to you from 1 Corinthians. But our bodies have many parts, and God has put each part just where he wants it. How strange a body would be if it had only one part. Yes, there are many parts, but only one body. The eye can never say to the hand, I don't need you. The head can't say to the feet, I don't need you. So God has put the body together such that extra honor and care are given to those parts that have less dignity. This makes for harmony among the members, so that all the members care for each other. If one part suffers, all the parts suffer with it. And if one part is honored, all the parts are glad. All of you together are Christ's body, and each of you is a part of it. Now, of course, these ideas are not new. This is only review. I, for one, need review. It is a hefty challenge to each of us to be praying for each of the other members within this body. It's hefty in terms of time commitment and importance. I submit to you that the importance of it justifies the time commitment. We should be praying regularly for each name in the directory. I have good reason to believe that some of us here are already doing this. As for the rest of us, let's make this a priority assignment. Excuse me. Along with this challenge, we also find a meaningful encouragement by way of reminder that we, each of us, is also on the receiving end of others' prayers. We are regularly being uplifted. And it is a heartfelt thank you to each of these brothers and sisters in this room for your role in coming alongside this church body, supporting, comforting, teaching, meeting needs, showing hospitality, etc., etc., etc. There are so many ways and so many opportunities to use the gifts we have. One more short scripture from Galatians. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. We might say that we're back to where we started. Are you praying for me?
So, if you have ever heard me do an assignment for school or anything, you know that I love asking questions to direct the attention off me. And so I am going to ask you two questions, and I want you all to raise your hands accordingly. I promise that none of these are embarrassing or deep in any way. And most of them are curiosity questions, but they will tie in later to the service. So first one is, how many of you have ever volunteered for a personal reflection? Has anyone here ever volunteered? I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's not very many of us. Well, I am clearly in the minority here, because I not only volunteered, I was looking forward to this. We will get to why in just a second. My second question is, how many of you remember my baby dedication? How many of you were here? Okay, well, yes, my father remembers. That's not surprising. There's a few people. Where am I? How many of you remember when you took the vow and said as one that you would raise me up in a Christ-like path? I am here to be up here, not because you failed me, but because I failed Christ, at least in my mind. And when it comes all down to it, we all need accountability. And what better way to get accountability than your church body? I know nearly every single person here, and I can safely bet that nearly every single person here knows me. You have seen me grown up here. I know that I am not alone, and that is why I'm not scared to be up here, though I am slightly nervous. And thus, this brings up the topic of secrets. I have them. In fact, you're going to hear one of them today. You have them. The person in the 7th row, 5th seat has them. The person playing for band up here has them. The teachers who are so diligently instructing our kids have them. Secrets are not necessarily associated with bad things like the word Holocaust would be, but if I told you, secrets are no fun, a lot of you will be able to finish the phrase, secrets hurt someone. So why do secrets hurt? Well, depending on the secrets, they can hurt the people around you, and they can hurt you. Let me give you an example. Ever since I was 13, I have been a pathological liar. For reference, I am 5 days away from being 18. For nearly 5 years, I have lied to nearly every single person I have met, barring one exception. I have probably lied to any of you on any given day. I'm not proud of it. I wish I didn't do it. But the truth is, I did, and I probably will still keep doing it in the throes of recovery. No one has ever guessed. No one has ever known that I was lying. Even sometimes I didn't know till it was too late. And that is a road no person should ever go down. Your brain is so powerful that it will make lies seem like truth, and truth, as in I love you or I care about you, seem like lies. It will warp your reality, and you will have a very hard time picking up the pieces or trying to piece back a mirror once it is broken. You will probably bleed from picking up the jagged corners, and sometimes you might give up, because you feel the reflection looking back at you is as shattered and lost as you feel. For me, pathological lying has had some very serious consequences, which is not a surprise. If you don't tell people, friends, and family how you actually feel, your emotions get bottled up and placed on a shelf inside you to collect dust and be forgotten. Eventually, though, they get out of hand. For me, feelings of depression, wanting to be accepted, bitter animosity towards the people I live with, and a whole slew of others followed me. I became distant. I didn't want to play games with others or do team-building activities with them or even wanted to eat with them or hear about their day. I simply did not care enough about the person to even ask how their day was. And it came down to the point because I didn't trust people, so I wouldn't trust your answer. I still don't trust many people. It took me 4.5 years to get my act together and realize that this isn't magically going to go away. I need help from both God and others who have maybe gone through similar things or just have helpful insight to share for a teenager who doesn't know much about anything about real life outside her house. But even after knowing that I need help, I get easily depressed and hopeless. For if everyone has their own problems, who would want to help the random average teenage girl who either talks too much or not at all? Not many people would look at me and go, well, there goes a wrecked young soul. No, many of people have looked at me and see a happy young girl with big dreams of the future and a sarcastic wit that sometimes gets her in trouble. They see a book reader who loves ink and pages more than people, which is problematic, and a girl with a brilliant mind for abstract thinking. They see the facade that I have put on for many years. Back in August, I realized I had had enough. I needed to either come clean or ask for help. And now, in front of you, I am doing both. I needed to, I don't know your stories, and I don't know your scars, but now you know mine. And the underlying theme in all of them is that we need each other, whether we like it or not. I'm a 17-year-old girl whose biggest problems are acne and senior year. I need accountability, though, not because I want the attention. My parents can assure you I hate attention on the subject of this. But because I am a follower of Christ, first and foremost, and that should be the focus of my life.